You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcast, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 29th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the Cornfield Resistance, where the actions of our tyrannical, freedom-hating governor have resulted in Illinois being the only state in America prepared for a limited Phase 3 reopening, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal.
So we have many more important things to talk about than J.B. Pritzker, but we congratulate him. Our state, Illinois, is the only state so far that has met the criteria for CDC recommendations for limited Phase 3 reopening, which means outdoor restaurants and wear masks everywhere and so forth. But
it's all very good news.
Yeah. So, and we're grateful. We're grateful for his leadership, and we're grateful that things are moving in the right direction, I would say. You know, it can always have another spike, and we can always have things go wrong. But grateful for his leadership, and grateful that he's done it by science and data.
Yeah.
And some other states have, too. I'm not saying some other states haven't done that, but he has done it that way.
We're just better than they are. And he isn't bullied. I mean, there are plenty of people, especially, you know, in Trump land, in the Trump Republican heavy areas where we live, that just are seethingly angry at anything any liberal does. And I do keep track of a lot of them. And they have stopped almost altogether talking about Donald Trump recently.
They've been real quiet all of a sudden. Yeah.
Clearly the dear leader, we're reached that last hour of downfall where the dear leader has completely lost his mind. And they
but Driftglass, they never liked the tweeting.
They never liked the tweet. Now they're just all about what a horrible job J.B. Pritzker is doing and what a monster J.B. Pritzker is. Democrat. And they really want to steer the conversation away from what they were saying a month ago about what a freaking genius Donald Trump is and how it's all a fucking hoax. And
well, I noticed that on Twitter, too, about Soros. George Soros is now big again.
Soros is huge. He's huge. Yeah. He's everywhere. He explains everything. He is the unified field theory of conspiracies. It's all a Soros conspiracy, and the fake media is all in on it, and you're in on it, Blue Gal.
Well, and they're getting plenty of help from Vladimir Putin on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, George Soros funded pro-democracy movements in Eastern Europe. So made him into the Jewish monster, and Putin helped. So, but we're getting far afield here. Yeah. You mentioned Illinois. I'm going to start the podcast today with a letter from not JB. This is from JA. So he's one letter in the alphabet before JB. So take that, JB.
Is it Jonathan Allen?
No, it's not Jonathan Allen from Politico. I assure you it's not.
He doesn't write us anymore. He doesn't write us nearly as much as he used.
JA from California wrote us and said, and this is just on the subject of Illinois.
Yes.
Dear Blue Gal and Driftglass, I've been listening for a couple of years and always appreciate your perspective. Even though I live in California now, I grew up in Illinois. Go Illini. And I also always appreciate hearing your accents. It feels like being back home. Thank you for all you do. Hashtag save the post office.
Yeah.
And I just want to ask him, what accent are you talking about?
No, dude, no. You have an accent, man. We don't have an accent. I don't know what kind of polyglot accent I have. I've lived everywhere, including the Philippines and Colorado and Iowa. So I'm not sure what.
You've got deep pipes that were made for broadcasting in an audio format.
Thank you. I have a face for radio. I really do.
Only time I've been told that is when I am liturgist at church.
Yes.
And then people say, oh, you should be on the radio. What, reading the Bible? Really? Yes. Okay.
And yes, you are. So how cool is that? There are certain isms, like, do you say insurance or insurance? There's certain things you can listen for. But I like to think of myself as the American version of the BBC voice, the universal across the board, friendly and all time.
That's usually Nebraska, isn't it? Isn't that Tom Brokaw? Nebraska is the – or Chicago. My dad always bragged that Chicago is the broadcasting standard of American, what Americans sound like.
Well, it used to be this basic center of the broadcasting universe. I mean, there there was a Dumont, I think, used to be a network that was out of Chicago, and Chicago had WGN. And
I think my grandmother sang on the radio for Dumont in Chicago.
See?
Yeah.
See, so there you go. Going far afield.
We're going really far afield here. Driftglass, we need to talk about what is happening in Minnesota, even though the so-called president of the United States did not talk about that today at his press conference in the Rose Garden.
No, he ran away. He
ran away like a coward. Ran away.
Like a giant coward. He stood up at the podium. Now, let me get make sure I have the timeline correct. We did the empty podium game for God knows how long.
48 minutes.
48 minutes. A camera pointed at an empty podium because that's what news is. And then Donald Trump came out and lied for 6 minutes, and then he ran away. Is that about right?
Right. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
He didn't lie that we're leaving the WHO, apparently.
No, that's true. He decided that people who do science are bad, and people who do science on an international cooperative level are truly bad. So he's going to blame everyone but himself, and he's going to pull out of every treaty he can. And he really is Vladimir Putin's biological weapon.
Yeah.
He really is just a monster who absolutely must go at the earliest possible opportunity. And
Driftglass, so where do you want to start with talking about George Floyd and the police lynching of George Floyd and how things have never changed? I mean, I was grateful. Joe Biden spoke today and he talked about 400 years of this.
Yes,
he didn't sugarcoat it at all. This has been going on for 400 years. It's time for it to stop. It makes me so sad to belong to a country where this is the case and where I have benefited from it and my people have benefited from it.
I don't know of anything. There are advocacy groups locally. There's a teaching racism group. I know the people who run it. They're wonderful people. I have said back when we were going to gather physically under one roof that because they had to get funding for it, and that was always tricky, and there were some problems to putting it together. But they asked me to come, and I said, well, I'm an ally, but I don't know what you're covering. And my history as a privileged middle-class white male is unusual in that I grew up partially overseas. I grew up next to a civil rights leading African-American family who co-mingled with us in the backyard all the time. I was in their house. They were in my house. My ex is African-American. I had to be vetted by her family, which was an ordeal that I shall not long forget. but we found a lot of common things to talk about. All I want to know is how I can help in any of these situations. I went to, you know, an AME church irregularly for a while. So I would like to do whatever I can. I'd like to be of use however I can. But if it's a matter of dollars per seat, there's probably someone else who could use it more than I can. And I was told, no, we want allies there too. So my only question to people who are much more at risk than I will ever be is what can I do to help? What practically can I do to help? Who can I write to? How can I vote? Where can I lend my voice? And what do you want of me? I'm at your service. We owe you a better country than this. We owe our children a better country than this.
Well, and I've been trying to think about what can I do to change my behavior that will bring about change or that will open up my ears more than they are. And I've been thinking about, I am not a podcast listener because I am terrified that if I listen to another podcast, A, it will destroy me in terms of, you know, it'll be better than mine and I'll be terribly upset by that. Also, I just don't want to be repeating what other podcasters said on my podcast. And I'm terrified that that's what I'll do. But on the other hand, I went and looked up today People of Color podcast to find out who is out there talking about these issues so that I could lift those people up on my podcast, because I think it's important for us to get out of our bubbles.
Yeah.
And it's important for me to get out of my bubble. Let me put it that way. And I what was interesting to me, and this shouldn't surprise me, but the landscape of non-white podcasters is incredibly similar to the landscape to white podcasters. That does not surprise me. No. There's a lot. There are tech podcasts. There are tons of music podcasts. There are tons of pop culture podcasts out there. And entrepreneurial podcasts, how to make money in podcasting podcast for black women, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
And all of that is very similar to the white podcasting world. You know, there you mentioned Frangela to me.
Yes. Love Frangela. That
they are funny and political and have a much larger audience than we do.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily necessary for me to give them traffic.
No.
But it would be worthwhile, I think, for me to listen to them this week.
Yeah. Yes.
Larry Wilmore has a bi-weekly podcast, Driftglass. Every other week he podcasts.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's hard to take a guy seriously when they don't podcast every week. But, you know, Larry.
Larry. But
Larry Wilmore, you know, he's out there. He's got a podcast. Uh-huh. There's one that I tweeted today called The Brown Girl's Guide to Politics, and that is the only one I saw, and it's a relatively new podcast, mm-hmm. that has already addressed the issue of George Floyd on their podcast. So they're on top of it.
Yeah.
And then there's In the Thick with Maria and Julio. You will recognize those people when you go. They've been on MSNBC and so forth, and that is another connected podcast they have. You know, media connections and know people and are reporters and so forth. So I just recommend that people go and search out and seek out non-white voices this week, because I think that's much more important than what I can contribute to this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Except for my sorrow and rage.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I listened to Joe Biden this morning and him saying 400 years, you know, that this he was not shirking American history or simply saying, well, this is Trumpism.
Well, we talked a little bit about I'm not sure if we're going to coin this phrase. I'll have to think about it. You know, we coined something and a couple of years later it catches on. A couple of years after that, it is taken. And a couple of years later, I feel bad. So, you know, something about anti-racist dog whistles.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Joe Biden will call out very clearly referring to the Republican Party, but never use the R word.
Right.
And it's really obvious who we're talking about. Now I prefer my fights out in the open.
Uh-huh.
But I understand that I'm not Joe Biden and I'm not running a presidential campaign and I'm not I don't have the strategic problems, the logistical problems he has, and I'm not him. So I'm unfettered by that need to do that. But it is really clear to me that sometimes this is done in the service of denial, like Mr. David Brooks of the New York Times, who just wrote an entire column about failed leadership and never mentions the word Republican once.
He's very good at that.
And oh my God, don't these true conservative, very serious people love their Lincoln, man? They fucking love Lincoln. Because he was a gentle, humble man who brought the nation together. And their Lincoln never fought the Civil War.
Exactly.
Which is so fucking weird. So there's a certain group of people, and we all know who they are. We all rang bells for them last week. We won't do that again this week. Who just won't talk about the fact that one of our two parties is really the problem. And then there's another group of people who are definitely talking about that, but really can't afford at this moment to say
the problem is fucking Republican.
The problem is Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump and the entire fucking party that brought them into our lives. They're the disease that's killing the country.
May I say that when I was listening to Joe Biden and he starts talking and I thought to myself, oh my God, he's talking about Republicans.
Yeah.
Over and over again. And then he said the word right in the middle of his statement. He says the word complicit.
Yeah.
And I went, Joe, you know, you're over there on the Buzzsprout. And I think you got the Buzzsprout from us.
Yeah. We're doing our best to coach him along, people. I mean, you know.
So when he said complicit, I was like, ding. Okay. Yep. We know who you're really talking to. As you say, it's the anti-racist
dog whistle.
And it's a way that he can talk about politics without having that partisan label slapped. Oh, you know, he's just being so divisive and partisan.
Yeah.
He's talking about racism. Yeah. And he's talking about the Confederacy. And right. We all know which party all of the current Confederacy types are in. Yeah.
Just look at the map. Just look at the electoral map. That's all you got to do. And, you know, he's coming along. I'd like to introduce him to two words: reprogrammable meatbag. If you could just work those into, you don't have to call them Republicans, Joe, but reprogrammable meatbag tells me this is a little fan service there, Joe, because, you know, I'm going to vote for you anyway. Everybody in my house is going to vote for you.
Everyone's going to vote for you. Even the Bernie kids are going to vote for Biden.
And I mean, the discussions we have in this house around race in the last 2 days.
Isn't it interesting?
Middle child wanted to grab me by my lapels and say, mm-hmm. Why didn't you fix this shit already?
What the hell happened? Drift Class, I want to say something about that because I've said it before and it's really important. I know my daughters especially get after me, especially when they've had a little bit too much TikTok and Instagram and they'll come down and they'll call me, Blue Gal, a Karen.
Right.
All right.
And they split a can of White Claw between them. So, you know.
Right.
They're crazy. They're
crazy. Let kids drink.
Yeah. Let kids drink.
Oh, they had a sip of White Claw. Ooh. They will very joshingly call me a Karen. Minivan check. Three kids check.
Yeah.
Calls the lawn guys check. Right. You know, she wrote a letter to the lawn guy. That's a very Karen thing to do.
Yes, it is.
And so. You know, I'll kind of sit there and put my chin down and say, all right, guilty, guilty.
Yes.
But the deal, the reason that is said in a joshing way and in a way that they know that I know that they know that this is bullshit is I made a conscious choice to send them to a majority Black school.
Yes.
I sent them to public school where they are bused to the east side to go to school.
Yeah.
And I did that because I wanted them to have an experience that I did not have going to school from 1968 to 1981. And my schools were white. And that was because I lived in a white neighborhood and there wasn't any opportunity. I mean, you just didn't go to school with Black kids in the 70s in Ohio. You just didn't do that. And my children, daughters in particular, because they're still in high school, both of them have best friends who are not white or not Caucasian.
Yep.
That's not me doing that. That's them being in the environment they're in and being the people they are and wanting to be with smart people and wanting to be expressive and wanting, frankly, with the youngest child, she just wants to be with the very cool people.
Right,
she's not going to tolerate dumb white people who have no culture.
No.
And both of them have very low tolerance for stupidity. Yeah. I mean, they just do. I'm really proud of them for how they have thrived in an environment. And I had that experience at Brandeis. I mean, it was a different experience because it was majority white, although all of my roommates were Black in college. But Brandeis was, you know, 90% Jewish, and I was a Christian and went to church and read the Bible and was active in Christianity as a religion. Mm-hmm. And being in the minority is a really valuable experience.
It is. It really is.
As a culturally and ethnically and racially white person in a white society. Mm-hmm. It's very valuable.
So there's no minority group that is equivalent to being Black.
No, there is not.
But I have been the outcast nerd, the outcast smart guy, the one of three people at my school who got the shit beaten out of them every day. Mm-hmm. I've been the smart weirdo. I've been the tall weirdo. I've been at the weird end of a lot of bell curves.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does help to have a window into majority culture that majority culture can't see.
Right.
That they don't see the machinery all around them that makes them privileged. And they don't see the wall that, you know, I forget who said it, that their conservative culture, you know, the doctrine of conservative culture is that there should be a law. Law should bind those who are in the lower classes and essentially liberate those in the upper classes. That's what the law is for. The law is there to oppress everyone who's below you and to liberate everyone above you, work on your behalf and work against their interests. That's conservatism. Mm-hmm. They believe in a royal hierarchy. You know, they believe in a hierarchical system where the best people are on top and the best people are white and them. And everything you see flowing from that is why we have the problems we have today. And which is why when David Brooks or whoever else fictionalizes Lincoln, it just kills me. Because like, Lincoln, if you would like to go full Lincoln, I'd love to have that conversation with David Brooks sometime. Because let's talk about Lincoln correctly identifying the internal enemy that was destroying the country, who were waging a treasonous war against the country's interests, and looked for the general who would destroy them and killed them, slaughtered them, burned their cities down, starved their citizens, bombed their ports, and beat them to their knees until they were given a choice between surrender and extinction. And then he was merciful. Then he was a uniter, but not until the threat was destroyed. And the idea that we're just going to leap over this whole part of that conversation where the threat from the Republican Party is every bit as virulent and hateful and dug in and real as the threat from the Confederacy in the 1860s.
I was going to say, if the Radical Republicans and Lincoln's actual political party as it actually stood had stayed in power until the 1900s, we would have still have black majority rule in the South.
It would. Oldest Child and I had that discussion today about what if, and that's a great history game, but it is wasted unless you use it to illustrate a point or demonstrate your thesis. And the thesis is that I think it was Ta-Nehisi Coates who did 12 years. We governed for 12 years, something like that. That was it. The Reconstruction and black majority rule in the South lasted for 12 years.
8 years, I think it was.
And that was it. That was it. Because white culture would not tolerate it. And it is that horrible legacy that we can't get rid of. We almost got rid of it a few times. But the problem...
And that's why you and I are talking about Republicans and burn the lifeboats for the same reason. Yes.
And this probably leads me to a letter I had about essentially saying, well, I love your podcast. You guys are doing great. But really, why do you focus so much on bad journalists and never Trumpers?
Right. And you're going to have 5 minutes to explain that. But also, you're going to have two minutes to talk about bad journalists. And then if you want to talk about science fiction for longer, I understand that that's an important component of your answer.
Yeah, it's a related subject. Why focus? Well, let's remember this week was Memorial Day. Memorial Day was Monday, and it's a day that we set aside every year specifically to remember the losses and sacrifices that we went through as a country in the past, even the immediate past. But we remember people who died for us.
Died in war, right.
Who died in war, who died in service to us. But literally in the name of it, it's memory. We're remembering the past. You know, woe betide the country that forgets its own past and forgets its own heroes and forgets who the bad guys and the good guys were. And it occurred to me during this week of remembering that the Republican Party and the Never Trumpers and the Beltway media all have at least one thing in common, and they are all clearly terrified of their own past, their own immediate past, the shit they said and the shit they did, and therefore they all hold that the most dangerous and unforgivable crime you can commit is daring to accurately and publicly remember history. Never Trumpers will scrap with anybody online who's a Republican and thinks Donald Trump's great. They love that fight. They live for that fight because that's a fight they can win in public. But let one lone asshole liberal from the Midwest say, but weren't you the ones who built this fucking party? And boom, you're blocked. They're not going to have that conversation because their game is let's all agree not to remember how we got into this horrible fucking mess. And that way we can all pretend the problem started in 2016. all the people here are equally guiltless, et cetera. And of course, we'll just forget that liberals even exist and have been warning about this for decades. And then they set about reshaping the future. They set about deciding what the past was and then use the power that they have over the controlling the narrative to create the future. And that's the reason I am deeply concerned about the things that most people are not concerned about. The triumph of shitty journalism in which the past is eradicated, and the elevation of a small handful of people who got kicked out of the Republican Party at the last minute to positions of sweeping authority over our national narrative. I don't get to go on television. You don't get to go on television, but Charlie Sykes and Rick Wilson and Michael Steele get to have as much of the national microphone as they want, anytime they want it. Steve Schmidt can have as much time as he wants, anytime he wants it. And the reason this bothers me is science fiction. Because science fiction is the question of what if. What if the future is this? What if that happens? What if aliens contact us? What if time travel is available? What if a meteor comes? What if? That's, in fact, there's a story called What If. One of the best science fiction magazines of the 60s and the 50s was called If. So science fiction is about looking at the future and speculating about what's coming next. And the motto of my humble little blog, driftglass.blogspot.com, used to be a quote by Ray Bradbury. In fact, it still is, which is, I don't try to predict the future. I try to prevent it. And having lived through a Republican regime that was permitted to rewrite its own history, pretend the Bush administration never happened, pretend they never said the shit that they said, never did the things they did, and were allowed by virtue of the fact they control the media, they control the cameras, they control the narrative, and all those reporters who rolled over for the Bush administration were terrified of anyone being held accountable for all the shit that they looked the other way on. They let them get away with it. They let all the Iraq war pimps get away with it. All the Iraq war pimps were given jobs in the mainstream media. Washington Post, New York Times, you name it. There's a torture pimp. There's a Bill Kristol. There's a Brett Stevens. There's a David Brooks. There's a Michael Gerson on staff on all of them. None of the people who led us over the brink during the Bush administration were ever punished for it. There's no consequence. And the base of the party, the people who voted for this shit and cheered for this shit and screamed that liberals were traitors and monsters and liars who deserve nothing, the people who hounded the Dixie Chicks off the stage and destroyed mm-hmm. their career, those people were allowed to put on funny hats and pretend that they'd never heard of George Bush and were allowed to all get away with it. And the only thing all of these people learned was that they just lie about it enough. If they just pretend it never happened, if we all go along with the fantasy that none of us had anything to do with the Bush administration, we'll win. We can get away with this shit. And that's the lesson the Republican Party learned the last time they were all allowed to lie about the past. The reason Donald Trump exists is because of that. Because mm-hmm. they all learned, hey, as long as we all lie together, as long as we all pretend we had nothing to do with this, as long as we agree never to hold each other accountable for the horrible shit we say and do, we can get away with murder. Because there's nobody else.
I want to disagree with you slightly.
Okay.
And that is that what Donald Trump did was break the rule of forgettery. Or shall I say what Jeb Bush did was break the rule of forgettery.
There you go. Because
the Republican establishment mm-hmm. said, forget all about George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. Never happened. Your Tea Party now. Put a funny hat on, as you say. Right. And then they said, and now we're going to make you vote for Jeb.
Exactly right.
And the base that they had created and programmed to forget. Mm-hmm. Said it fried their circuits.
Yes, it did.
And they rebelled against David Brooks and the establishment that
created them,
or that thought they had created them. Yeah,
well, this is where I don't think we're in such disagreement, because Donald Trump then used the Iraq war as a mm-hmm. knife, saying,
right.
No, all of my base, the Republican base, was never involved in this. It was these people up here who lied to us. They're the criminals. They're the liars. And now they're throwing it back in your face.
You didn't yell Fox Rocks with your TV at the beginning of the Iraq War.
No, yeah. all, all the people that Donald Trump needed to keep on his side, the entire Republican base and Fox News and hate radio, all went along with the fantasy that this was all George Bush. This is all those people. We weren't involved in this. That had nothing to do with us. As long as they stuck together and lied and lied and lied, they could then turn on the GOP establishment and said, it was you and it was the liberals and it was Soros. It was all of you. It was all you. And thus letting all the good Germans, all the lunatics, all the skinheads, all the assholes, all the racists, all the homophobes who make up the GOP continue to lie about what they did during the war, Daddy. And so Trump gave them a promise in that moment. He gave them an implicit promise. I will never be the one who rubs this in your face. Yeah. I will continue lying to cover your sorry racist ass. In fact, you don't need to cover it up anymore. You can just come out as a racist because that's just embrace your inner Klansman. I'm here to tell you that all the things these assholes told you, you know, under the rose, side note, whispered to you in the dark, you know, sure, go ahead and be a bircher, be an asshole, be a racist, be a Nazi. We don't really give a shit as long as you vote for us. Just don't do it in public. I'm here to tell you that it's okay to do it in public. I'm here to tell you there's no shame in your game at all. These assholes want your vote, but they're ashamed of you. I'm not ashamed of you. I embrace you. And they ran to his flappy arms, and they've been there ever since. But the trick is keep lying. Keep lying. Just keep lying. Keep pretending that Chuck Todd never said what he said or did what he did. Chuck Todd never castigated, you know, Hillary Clinton for being overprepared. And this is where my science fiction brain comes in, because I'm trying to look around the next corner, because we're going to get through Trump one way or the other. But what's around the next corner? What happens after this broken, financially broke, angry, exhausted, crippled nation limps out of the Trump age? Who is going to be occupying the national narrative? Who's going to be center stage? Is it going to be the people who were right all along, who said this was going to happen, who warned this was going to happen, who have plans to prevent it from ever happening again by making sure the Republican Party is extinct within the next 10 years? No. It's going to be Joe Scarborough and Charlie Sykes and David Jolly and Steve Schmidt, all of whom are going to say, look, a few bad apples caused this horrible, horrible malfunction of the Republican Party. And the rest of these good people felt the need to go along with it, as misplaced as it was, because they needed to get important things done. They felt in the best interest of the country, they needed to sort of shut up and go along, because what's the alternative? Let liberals run the country? Oh, heaven forfend. And that will be the narrative. The reasonable center will now be occupied by the people who were the most extreme Republicans 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the right will be Tom Cotton and the reincarnation of George Wallace. And the left will simply cease to exist. That's what I see coming for us 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, if now we let them do this to us. Right now, we have all the power. Right now, liberals are the ones who are right. Never Trumpers were wrong. They've been wrong their whole life. Liberals were right. I do not understand why we don't act like Lincoln and say, sure, we will accept your unconditional surrender, or we will make you extinct, because we won. We're the ones who are proven to be right. The Republican Party is every bit the racist shit pile we always told you it was. And either you knew about it all along, you're okay with it, or you didn't know about it all along, in which case you're a moron. Either way, you're unfit to be part of the public conversation of this country anymore. But my liberal friends didn't do that. My liberal allies didn't do that. They said, oh, goody, someone's validating what I've always believed. Here, have a book deal. Here, have some time on television. Here, have your own radio show. Yes, I will blurb your shit. And suddenly those people now control our narrative, which is not a good thing, because they are not our friends. And all my liberal friends who think, well, you know, once this is all passed, we'll just chuck them out the door. No, no, no. They will chuck you out the door. Remember what happened after the Iraq War? For that 5-minute period when liberals were actually being taken seriously? Yeah, that lasted about a minute. And then Harold Ford Jr. showed up and talked about my friends on both sides of the aisles. And isn't it a shame how the extremes on both sides and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly all the liberals who had warned about the Bush administration, who warned about Dick Cheney, who warned about Gonzalez, who warned about Karl Rove, who warned about the Iraq War.
We're polite enough to be on television.
We're too strident.
Too strident.
Too loud. Too shrill America was Bush fatigue. We're tired of all that. And all the people who were right about the Bush administration were shoved out the door. And all the people who were Bush administration war pimps were given gigs in the media. And that's when I knew, oh, game over. We lost. We won, actually. We won the debate over the efficacy of war, the conservative economic ideas. We won all on all the stuff. We lost the game. We lost the game because we let them push us out the door by pretending to be our friend for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they will do it to us again. And as sure as I'm sitting here, and this is why science fiction inflects my thinking, because my interest in this moment in history is, what will it look like in 5 years? Who's winning and who's losing? Who's occupying the public square and who's not? Who's being sidelined? And why are they being sidelined? Why are people who are clearly right all along being shoved to the side, and people who are clearly wrong all along being given positions of high respect and authority? The answer can only be, they don't want the narrative to be liberals are right.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do anything. And what will that result in 5 years from now? President Tom Cotton.
Yeah.
And that scares the shit out of me. Because we got an idiot now in the White House and a bunch of misfits and looters running the place. Imagine an efficient fascist state run by Tom Cotton and a bunch of wild-eyed zealots
who knows what the shit he's doing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who start locking liberals up. And I'm saying the way to prevent that from happening is to act now. Just as the way to prevent Trump from happening was to act during the end of the Bush administration to not let them get away with it. Do not let them burn their uniforms and pretend that they weren't there.
I've been writing a lot lately in my journal.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I did, because I got tired of just writing, here's what I did today, and here now I'm brain dumping, and now I'm this, and it didn't seem to be accomplishing anything by just filling pages.
Uh-huh.
So I went and found a free kind of 365 journal writing prompts a day book and put it on my Kindle, and I've been using it and writing, and I had a little fun this week. I shared one of the pieces I started with you.
Yeah, it was very good.
The prompt this morning, I thought, oh, well, at least this is podcastable. My prompt this morning was, if you could snap your fingers and be anywhere in the world, where would you want to go? Where would you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate response was, you mean during a pandemic without my family? Is that what you mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, I kind of looked at my Kindle and said, really? You want me to snap my fingers and go someplace else and leave my house and not be in my home? And then I wrote down in my journal about what the Trump presidency, COVID-19, what's happening all over the country in terms of police or people who think they're police killing black people.
Yeah.
George Floyd is just the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is obliterating the ability to think in terms of dreaming.
Yes.
Yes. It's removing our ability to imagine mm-hmm. something, even if it's just a fantasy, imagine something better.
Right.
Because you're up to your earlobes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why you're having problems writing. I mean, I can't diagnose you, but I know you pretty well. And I think one of the reasons you're having problems writing is part of the writing process is asking what if, and is asking, you know, how can I spin this out to give some prediction and formulate a plan of action for how we can make this better. And it's impossible to do that right now.
Well, and there's that quote from, I think, Proverbs, where there is no vision, the people perish.
Right.
And if your vision is cannot extend further than a week, becomes dizzying and depressing mm-hmm. and exhausting. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I am doing great, by the way. I'm not an ER person.
Both of us are very fortunate and blessed and, you know, not.
No, I'm not a frontline healthcare worker.
Right.
I'm not a black man trying to survive in America. There's no. Don't take this as that at all. It is my writer brain, which has been writing about politics and writing about Republicans, writing about the failure of the media for 15 years now, more than 15 years, every day. And every day I am I used to write really long posts, long posts, thousands of words. I used to dip into my own comment section and engage with people, which I haven't done in a couple of years at least. And my posts get shorter and shorter because I don't know what else to say than, here's a post I wrote in 2007. Here's a post I wrote in 2009. Here's a post I wrote in 2011. Because it's just, for me as a writer, exhausting to have to grab people, and I know that my regular readers are tired of it, grab them by the hair and say, we warned you this was happening. I mean, I can only say that so many times before my brain just starts going in a circle. Here's another shitty, terrible thing that this person I've been writing about for 15 years has done again. Do I have anything new to say about it? Not really. I can wonder, I can speculate, I can ask again, I can shake my fist at God and say, why do these people continue to have unfettered access to the public square and the respect of their colleagues when they're so clearly unqualified? I've worked in a lot of jobs, and I have never, ever seen a profession that sanctifies shitty, awful people, and everyone goes along with it when the thing that they're doing that's shitty and awful is publicly available, where you can literally look up what they said a week ago and say, but this asshole said this thing and they've been wrong forever. And there's no court of appeals for this. You can't go to the Schulzberger's house and ask them why. Well, why? David Brooks mm-hmm. and Brett Stevens has a job there. The guards would cut you down. They'd release the killer bees and you'd be driven from their property. You can't ask why Bill Kristol is still allowed anywhere to sit anywhere in front of a microphone ever. There's nobody who will take that call. There is a separate machine, a separate entity that dominates our politics and dominates our media life that is being run by people who do not give a shit about any of us at all. And it is exhausting to have measured the shape and size and scope and direction and miles per gallon and feeding habits of this thing over 15 years and to be pounding on it and pounding on it and pounding on it, and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And then it rolls over another group of people and everyone freaks out and goes, oh my God, why weren't we warned? And then you watch that machine reconfigure itself so that it takes no blame. It goes into camouflage mode. No one gets fired. No one gets disciplined. Everything goes quiet for a while, and then it just goes right back to what it was doing. And that is that's why writing is getting trickier for me, because writing about politics and media is sort of what I do. And yet there's nothing new to say other than everything that we told you was going to happen has gotten exactly as bad and worse as that we warned you. Why is this still going? Why are we still having this debate?
Why is an empty Trump podium still a thing?
Yes. Why it was
for 45 minutes.
It was a thing in 2015 and we all laughed about it and yeah. wondered, why are you doing this? Now that you have been attacked by these people and jailed by these people and mm-hmm. spat on by these people and you're still doing it. What sort of fucking monster do you work for that sends you into this maelstrom every day? What is so malfunctioning? What is so broken about you that Maggie Haberman, that you keep showing up to this horrible party looking for a little inside access? And I have to believe that they simply live entirely different lives than everyone else. Yeah. Their values are not our values. Their beliefs are not our beliefs. This week, I forget who it was. Oh, Soledad O'Brien was just taking the New York Times to the woodshed. And I reminded her, although the response was from other people, that well, the New York Times will get up on its hind legs and proclaim freedom and fight for it as long as Donald Trump personally attacks them. As long as he personally goes after the people who publish the New York Times. That's when Schulzberger, the youngest, went over to the Wall Street Journal and wrote a post about freedom and the press and how awful this all is. They will not rise to the defense of anyone else. They will not take a side on anything else. They'll keep letting shitty, awful people have control over their op-ed page. But if you walk into the Schulzberger's universe and punch them in the face with the fist of the president of the White House, of the imprimatur of the White House, then they will suddenly get very interested in the freedom of the press and justice and how, my God, how can this be tolerated? Because it's their business. You're attacking their business because it is a business. And so I don't know where to sort of put the period on the end of the sentence, other than to say, I will go back to writing tomorrow and I'll write the next day and I'll shift my brain over to doing Photoshop. And that'll keep my left side of my brain happy while the right side of my brain recovers. But I don't know if it's true for you guys out there, but I don't know, other than voting and getting out and knocking doors virtually and doing everything in our power to make sure these horrible people are voted out, I don't know what more there is to be said. I think Joe Biden has the right strategy, which is sit in the basement, yeah, give speeches, and let Donald Trump hang himself. Yep. And the people who will not acknowledge that he is doing that, or who want to pretend both sides will do it, cannot. Now, 15 years of experimentation has convinced me, cannot be moved. The both-siderist is a both-siderist till the day they die. And a Republican is a Republican till the day they die. And none of these people are going to change their opinions no matter what I do. Things can get really bad as they are now. And a few both-siderists will temporarily stop doing this because it becomes as popular as what did I write today? A kissing booth in a COVID isolation ward. temporarily. Mm-hmm. Guarantee you, all the people who've suddenly realized that, oh shit, it really isn't both sides. You know, that's my brand. It's been my brand forever, but I really can't just keep writing this shit, because it's all those people will go right back to doing that after the November election. All of them. All of them will do it. And they will forget.
There are some things, though, that are a little different this time. Well, and I want to end by talking about a couple things that are different.
About the Biden campaign strategy?
Yeah, because I think it is different. And part of it is different because of COVID, and you just things are just going to be different. Mm-hmm. But Joe Biden is, as you say, you know, when your opponent is drowning with an anvil let go of the anvil.
Toss him more anvil.
Yeah, toss him more anvil, or don't, or just say, well, you know, there he is. Joe Biden making up for his first public appearance in weeks at the Delaware Tomb of the Unknown, or the military cemetery,
mm-hmm,
wearing a mask like a boss,
mm-hmm,
and reminding everyone without saying a word that he's from a military family.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes it seriously. He takes Memorial Day and the sacrifices that Americans, including people in his family, have made for this country. He takes all of that very seriously. Such a contrast to Trump. And he didn't have to say anything by doing that. And then this, I didn't recognize it until this week, mm-hmm, what a smart decision it was to announce that he was going to pick a woman to run as early vice president.
Early,
but he did it over a month ago. And the interesting thing that has happened as a result, We have this VP stakes nonsense going on. And personally, and I don't have any insider information. I'm not on any mailing list. Don't know anybody with the campaign. Mm-hmm. But I personally think he's probably already asked the person, and she has probably already said yes. So I don't think of this as a serious horse race for the vice presidential slot. But the fact that there's a short list, and those in the media who are talking about this as if it is a horse race are talking about it in terms of each individual woman's capabilities, ability to attract voters, ability to raise money, the issues that they are focused on, the issues that might help Joe Biden in the general election. And we're talking about all of these amazing, capable women as if they're serious candidates.
Yes,
because not are. As if it's a woman.
Yeah,
and
it's not a stunt.
It's not a stunt, and it's not, well, if he picks a woman, then the woman vote. It's right. He's going to pick a woman, and then what? And then how? Yes.
Look at all these competent, excellent, able women that we have to choose from in the Democratic Party. Yep.
And what they bring to the table,
mm-hmm,
is not. There's a wonderful song out there. It is so funny. If you have not heard it, it's by a woman named Storm Large. That is her real name, Storm Large. It's called My Vagina is 8 Miles Wide. You need to go look it up on YouTube, honey, and you need to listen to it.
Honey, this is, Honey, this is a fucking family show, okay? So
and I just imagine each of these women candidates, and this is a feminist song, okay?
Yeah.
She wrote this song. Storm Large wrote this song when she was told not to come to, what was it? Lilith Fair. Because she wasn't feminine enough. She wasn't the folk song feminine. She's a tall, broad-shouldered, gutsy singer.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't fit the mold of what they were looking for mm-hmm. at Lilith Fair. And so she wrote a song called My Vagina is 8 miles Wide. Absolutely everyone can come inside.
Art will save us, baby. Yes, it will.
And I just imagine that, you know, this, what we're talking about, there is a connection between this song and these women running for president. It's not a sexist issue. It's a feminist issue of here's what I bring to the table. Here are the voters that I can bring enthusiastically to your table, right. Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And those qualities that we have always just looked to men to fulfill in terms of finding the right vice president to balance the ticket.
Uh-huh.
I just think it's incredibly smart now that I've come to this that, oh, wow, we're talking about 5 or 6 women.
Right.
As if any one of them could be vice president of the United States.
And we're
which
getting
for some of them is a step down, frankly.
Yeah, and we're getting indignant that we can only pick one. What do you mean I only pick one?
Right.
I want them all. Well, that's why we have cabinet positions and other things and senates and so forth. But
it is an
embarrassment of riches, as they say.
Yeah. And I say this with, you know, being a huge fan of Elizabeth Warren, and I am a huge fan of Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. I make no secret about that. Vice president, if she's the choice, that's a step down for her.
Yes.
So that's my position. That's a step down for more than one of them. And I understand that, you know, depending on how the president treats the vice president and you know, George W. Bush gave the vice president a tremendous amount of power. It was a really bad thing.
Well, and Barack Obama did the same, and it was a good
thing. But Barack Obama did the same, and it was different. So it just depends on, you know, if Elizabeth Warren is the vice presidential nominee and then is given also the secretary of getting plans done.
Yeah.
You're going to be the plan person. Oh, okay. I can do that. All my plans. All right, let's do it. But I think he's going to pick Kamala Harris. I'm going to go on the record as saying that. Junior Dude thinks Stacey Abrams would activate his base, you know, young Bernie voters better than Kamala Harris.
Well, and
he stated that to me.
Well, and he's, you know, he's a politically savvy 21-year-old political science major who's got big plans for this country once he's president, let me tell you.
He certainly does.
But you and I were at Netwitz Nation, I believe. And uh-huh. Uh-huh. I think it was Dave Weigel,
uh-huh.
who was going around asking people, like, what's your breaking point? You know, if Hillary Clinton picks a vice president, would that turn you off? Is that it? And I think it was him, because that's when he outed me in the Washington Post, which I did.
Yes, it was. He did. Yes.
But I believe my answer was, as long as Hillary Clinton doesn't pick Curtis LeMay, the mortal remains of Curtis LeMay, I don't give a shit who she picks, because anyone will be better than anything happening on the right, because Donald Trump is a fucking monster. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that. I mean, anyone mm-hmm. that Joe Biden picks other than the mortal remains of Curtis LeMay, I'll draw the line there. Has got my vote. You've already got my vote. I've gone from being kind of depressed and wound down to being really, thank you for reminding me that we have just this staggering amount of talent on the left
mm-hmm,
to choose
mm-hmm.
from. I mean, you know, you're looking at Kayleigh McEnany and is the brain trust on the right. And Nikki Haley, who was clearly willing to shave her head and tattoo a swastika in her forehead if she thinks it'll get her the nomination. That's who the right has. That is their brain trust. That is the best they have to offer. And in a gerrymandered election, stolen election, cheating election, Putin election, that might be enough. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be naive enough to say that that's, that couldn't happen. But right now, the number of people on the left who are clearly qualified to be not just vice president, but to be president, should that happen, is breathtaking, because all the normal people are in one party. All the smart people are in one party. And again, let me say it once more for the record. If we had a parliamentary system, we would have five parties. Yeah. But now we have an evil, dumb party and an everybody else party. And in the everybody else party, we get in each other's ways because we have very different views on how, what policies should be implemented and how they should be implemented. I think we all sort of agree on the outcomes we'd like to see: happier, freer, better adjusted, better educated, less racist people.
Mm-hmm.
But we're always going to have those kind of arguments. But I long for the day when we actually have policy arguments over how best to get something done, as opposed to, oh shit, Donald Trump just told the WHO to go fuck itself.
Right.
Well, isn't that that just happened today? That's just one of the many, many, many horrible things that happened this week. And let's just get the horrors behind us, and then we'll debate how to best move the country forward without the never Trumpers.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked your Republican patriotism checklist.
Oh, yeah? You want to go through it?
In our notes. Sure. Kneeling during song, major crime against patriotism.
Yes.
Lynching of jogger by racist vigilantes, justice. George Zimmerman murdering Trayvon Martin, self-defense. Armed and armored white supremacists storming state houses. Yep. And with guns. First Amendment heroes. Yeah.
First Amendment heroes. Yep.
And then you have the last one.
Angry black protesters are thugs who should be gassed and or shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting how all those free speech people from the First Amendment hero era of 10 days ago are now super quiet about free speech and right to protest.
Well, we got through most of this podcast without talking about Twitter and Facebook.
What you have written here about Mark Zuckerberg, I mean, he's just horrible. He's just horrible.
Yeah, he is.
All right. He makes me stabby. All right. We're gonna stop now. We love you guys. Have I told you that? We love you guys.
I do want to mention one thing. If you haven't looked up the Pennsylvania Republican Party and what they were up to, I suggest you go check that shit out. Pennsylvania Republican Party, one member tested positive for COVID-19, didn't tell the Democrats that he was working with, told the Republicans, didn't tell the Democrats, was in there with them. And a week later, the Democrats found out and blew a gasket, and rightly so, because these people didn't share the fact with people they were talking with, they were handshaking with, they were brushing up against in the hall, that they had brought the plague into the state house with them. So my notes.
I want to do a shout out. I know we talk about him a lot on this podcast, but Andy in England has been tweeting this week. Everything that's going on here is going on in some way, shape, or form in England right now, too.
Yeah.
There is a guy who works for Boris Johnson, who's like Boris Johnson's brain, political brain, who not only tested positive for coronavirus, but had symptoms of coronavirus and decided to travel and decided to go to this castle town and decided to do this and that. And now the entire right wing ecosphere is saying, well, it's because he loved his family. And really, we need to talk about how the rules were different for him because they're different for him. And just making excuses over and over again and pretending that those rules just didn't apply in this particular instance.
Well, as you know, Newt Gingrich only cheated on his wife because of patriotism.
Patriotism. Yeah.
But he loved his country so damn much.
It's exactly the same thing. Yeah. And the people from Cambridge Analytica, who are banned from doing business in Great Britain and banned from doing business in Canada because they worked for Putin. You know, they formed a three-letter acronym type name, and now they're advising Boris Johnson, the same people, on electoral strategy and mailing lists and how to influence social media. And it's absurd, but it is exactly the people, the kind of people, the white nationalist, white supremacist conservatives are the same everywhere.
Well, and on that note, I would like to point out that Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter in the death of George Floyd today. Speaking of white supremacists who need to get their comeuppance. The flip side of that is that Donald Trump took to Twitter twice in less than 2 days to deliberately incite violence.
Mm-hmm.
He retweeted a supporter who said that the only good Democrat is a dead Democrat in his tweet, and then went on to tweet, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts."
Which is from the 60s. It's from the Miami sheriff in the 60s who said that. Yeah. He's George Wallace all over again. Yeah. And he's appealing to that Klan base of his for, as I said it, clicks and attaboys.
Yeah. Yep.
That's all he's got.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us are horrified, and rightly so.
Yes,
and
we are.
Burn out by this guy. So we're going to talk about internet kitties now.
Yes. Let's talk about them.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties are Flea and Bait, as in flea bait.
Oh.
Flea and Bait are, I believe, siblings, and they're really unusually colored. They're the color of their fur is white and orange blend, and they look like a creamsicle. They are just the lightest creamy orange color, and you really should go check them out because they're beautiful cats. And of course, Flea and Bait eat freshly poured cat food. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Flea and Bait at our Facebook page or website. You can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag save the post office. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. We certainly do appreciate those of you who have sent us a chunk of your Trump money.
Mm-hmm. Your dirty Trump money.
Dirty, dirty Trump money. We do offer...
Indulgences?
Indulgences. That's the word I was looking for. Donate to the ACLU. Donate to us. If you have it and you're... giving money away, we appreciate your supporting our podcast. Thank you.
We really do.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. We've got PayPal. You can do it that way. You can send us a letter. We love letters. We love going to the P.O. box and finding stuff in there from you. And that's a way to support the post office as well. And all the other information you need to reach us or get merch or do anything else to engage with the show, it's all there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and we do appreciate you doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties have pledged not to go outside until phase 17. What is that phase? It's there are no more Republicans. So it's going to be a while. It's going to be a while. And one little addenda I want to just put at the very end of the podcast.
Sure.
If you're looking for us, you'll probably find us this Sunday in a Black Lives Matter automobile procession through the heart of Springfield.
We will be there.
Yes. We will. Probably the whole family will be there. And we will see people we know and love through the windows. And I've already gotten an invitation to sit in the parking lot with some – social civic organization folks that I know, which I may or may not take up on, but there are still things you can do to make your voice heard and seen in the public eye. And this is one of them. And if there's such a thing happening near you, we strongly urge you to participate in whatever way you feel that you can.
Thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure, Blue Gal. Love you.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.